The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
9 months, you're a monk. Work as hard as you can, and if it goes well, well then you can enjoy, you can have as much social life as you want when the job is done.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score the Euros. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
You are welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. Our coverage of football, thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation as well on our digital and social channels. So listen on News Talk, but also watch us on Periscope for Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. For iOS and Android, search OTB Sports in your App Store now to download it if you haven't already. Delighted to be joined by the former Republic of Ireland international David Myler, the UEFA Pro License coach Shane Keegan, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game. Good afternoon, lads. I hope you're well. David, Hungary, 1-0 up against France.
Oh, no. JDM, just after watching probably 30 minutes of the first half, I missed the goal there because I was sorting on my kids. But no, do you know what? Fair play to Hungary. I know France have had some good chances, but they've been aggressive. Obviously, they're at home. Obviously lost to Portugal today, so they need a result. But I mean, they've been good value here. They've really, you know, put their bodies on the line. And look, when they created a chance there, they're after taking it. So, you know, look, at the same time, France are a huge team with incredible talent at their disposal. So it's a big second half for them.
Johnny, did you see the goal? It was from Attila Fiola. He just darted into the box and just took his chance, just brushed past Varane and went into the back of the net.
It was very poor defending by the French, and I think a couple of things that shone through in that game were the value of having a crowd back. It sounds like an absolutely raucous crowd there, and they're like really getting behind a very aggressive Hungarian team. And as it stands, JD, I mean, how good do Ireland look all of a sudden? The performances of Wales, Finland, Slovakia, and now Hungary mean that really, if we were at this tournament, we'd probably be looking at topping one of our groups at the moment. So, all joking aside, though, it is actually encouraging to see that the teams aren't. Have competed well against. They're doing, by and large, doing quite well at the tournament. I really didn't fancy Hungary to give France much of a game, but France's game plan against, you know, the likes of Germany, I thought it worked a treat. This has been a bit disappointing, and there's a nice narrative to talk about today over the last 24 hours, and that two of the main teams, particularly, like I think France, I wouldn't really be too concerned, but England's performance last night and the performance of their crowd as well, I think, does not bode well for them at all at this tournament.
Shane Keegan, this is all about the conservatism of Deschamps being tested now. At the World Cup, he passed the flying colours. Argentina scored four goals against Croatia. This is the test now. Let them off the leash.
Yeah, I wouldn't be pressing any panic buttons yet, JD, to be honest with you. I think France will win the game. They showed it off in the first half. There was a chance there about the half-hour mark where Griezmann dropped deep over on the right-hand side of the field and played a fantastic ball over the top to Mbappe. I don't know. The only thing I couldn't decide is whether Mbappe's first touch or second touch was the better. They were both absolutely unbelievable. The manner in which he brought it down and then flicked it straight into Benzema's path. Benzema should have had a handy job of putting it away, and he managed to miscue it and put it wide. It would have been an absolutely fantastic team goal if they'd scored it. I think they'll need to up the gears a little bit in the second half, but I think they will do. They have so much quality. Look, it's a brilliant goal. It is a brilliant goal, particularly against, you know, a centre-back pairing that I would say to me is the best in the tournament. I know they're 1-0 down here at the moment, but I look at that. I think they're the best centre-back pairing in the tournament. I think they have the best centre midfielder in the tournament in Kante, and they definitely have the best attacking unit. I just can't see them not turning this around, and I can't see them not going very, very, very deep in this tournament.
Attila Viola's celebration, David, he just sprinted towards the tape, hurdled it, and then there was a media lady, and he just smacked his hand on her desk and he flew a few things. That's the adrenaline, that's the beauty of scoring a goal in a major championship finals. Goal celebrations, did you ever go absolutely bananas when you scored a goal?
Yeah, the first one I scored, my first, you know, one in the Premier League when I scored against Liverpool, obviously most people are fully aware, it was the team I supported as a boy. Playing them at home, I scored to put us, we were 1-0 up, went 1-1 I put us 2-1 up about 70 minutes into the game. And I just did a big, huge run around and then 2 foot of the corner flag, you know, screaming at the crowd. You just, emotion takes over because you're talking there about the goal there for Hungary. You're at home, the full house of the Puskás Arena. You know, they're desperate for a result and, you know what I mean, against France, world champions, nobody expects them to beat them. Do you know what I mean? So emotions do take over. You kind of, you know, it's nice to like, let it out as long as it doesn't go too far.
Who was the guy, the Georgian guy for Newcastle? Was it Ketsbaya, was it? Or?
Yeah.
That's how to celebrate a goal, David.
Well, he starts booting everything. And then, of course, the other night we seen Arnautovic. Then you kind of like, that's what I mean when it can't go over the top, when you kind of like your emotions are running deep. Like Ketsbaya, I don't know what it was. I think he was dropped, wasn't he? And then he comes on, he scores, and then he just starts booting the hoarding boards like it's nothing, like, you know.
JD, my young lad JD was out on the trampoline yesterday practicing his diving headers, which led me to pulling out the phone so I could pull up a YouTube clip to show him what a real diving header looked like. Showed him a couple of Klinsmann's ones for us.
Don't mention Keith Houchin.
he was absolutely fantastic at them, so he was. And his celebration is I'd say that's the one that kind of, when I think of player celebrations, Klinsmann's the dive, I just thought the irony to it was brilliant considering the reputation he arrived in England with, you know.
No better celebration than Marco Tardelli, lads. 1982 World Cup. That is ecstasy and euphoria. That is the height of being on top of the world for me. Is there any better one than that?
I think you're right, and it's just the fact that you know, you look at Tardelli's almost, it's a cross between joy and anguish at what he's achieved and that goal and the level that he's achieved at that, and the fact that he's completely out of control at that moment. I think Liam Brady even referenced it actually after a goal the other night, which obviously evoked memories of the whole trap regime and all that, when we didn't have many amazing goal celebrations. But it's just when it's not pre-planned, I think, JD, and it's just that beauty of losing yourself to the moment in front of your adoring fans at that stage.
David, would you ever talk in the dressing room about planned celebrations? You know, we remember with the Romario Bebeto with the babies in the 1994 World Cup and the Craig Bellamy golf swing, all that kind of thing. Is it ever discussed?
I've never had the discussion. I don't think anyone's ever come to me to have a discussion about it either. I imagine lads do, you know. Of course, you know, the dentist chair, which has been famously spoken about for, God, the entire last 2 weeks and 25 years. And then obviously they do it at Scotland. But like, I imagine people do have these little talks. You see, if you remember West Ham's one, was it Declan Rice, Fornals, Lingard? They had this little ban going on. So I do think that like there are conversations between certain players about these kind of celebrations.
The Jimmy Bullard one, that had to be planned as well, didn't it? Remember
it
when
did, that was planned. I believe that was actually Paul McShane's idea.
Really? No. Yeah.
I wasn't at Hull at the time, but I believe, to the best of my knowledge, it was Paul McShane's, and they found it. You look, we've all seen Jimmy Bullard in various different things. Jimmy, he's a character. If you remember that clip of Wigan when there was like a goal mouth scramble and he just comes running and he just jumps over everyone. Jimmy's always been like that. You know what? He's a breath of fresh air. He's wild. But I believe it was Paul McShane's idea. Now, Paul will probably let me know if I'm wrong, but he said to Jimmy, like, you should do it. And obviously then Jimmy did it. So that was planned.
This was what Phil Brown giving the players a telling off. And then Jimmy Bullard went and they all gathered around.
That was brilliant as well, though.
Yeah. Listeners out there, 53106, any better celebration of world football goal scoring than Marco Tardelli in the 1982 World Cup or something more contemporary? I remember Pirlo when he would put that Panenka, was it, against England? That was just ultimate and cool. And about last night, about England, we got to congratulate Scotland here first, because there's going to be so much talk about England. Let's congratulate Scotland for a brave heart performance full of Celtic passion. And David, Billy Gilmore, Happy Gilmore, he was the man who caught the eye of everybody, I thought.
You know what, JD? I think like Billy Gilmore was excellent, but I think you've got to give credit to like nearly every Scottish player that played for the performance they put in. It was remarkable. Now England, I know, weren't firing at all cylinders, but it was a big call from Steve Clarke to put Gilmore in. There was a lot of Scottish press, you know, Scottish ex-players were calling for him to start. The thing is, he's at Chelsea, so he's obviously very technical. What we seen last night for a 20-year-old was just composure that, when it was frantic, you knew that England would were going to dominate possession. But when, you know, Scotland were able to get the ball, Billy Gilmore put his foot in it. He was able to control it, to keep it, you know, for that 5, 6, 7, 8 passes. Almost give the Scottish players, you know, kind of a second wind, give them a break. And then what really, like, amazed me was Scotland were, like, taking a lot of care with the ball, moving it from side to side and getting into England's half to create chances. You know, they were very well, you know, they played very well. You know, fair play to them.
There might be a school of thought, though, well, this lad is too small, but tenacity makes up for that. He won the ball back 8 times, David, over 90% of his passes successfully completed. Size isn't everything.
No, 100%. Look, the prime example is Lionel Messi. You know, everyone knows how good of a football player he is, and he's not exactly tall, is he? So, like, that's the thing. You know, he mightn't have the physique or the strength of other players, but he's certainly got the technical ability. People always ask me about, you know, the best players I played against or whatever. David Silva's one of them. Never really used his right foot. Wasn't fast, wasn't strong. But you could just neck it, and you could never get near him. He was just so clever. He was, you know, 2-3 moves ahead of you all the time. And, you know, I'm not saying Gilmore is the next David Silva or anything, but, like, Billy Gilmore is like that, where he's very switched on. He's very neat and tidy. Look, like you said there with his possession stats, he doesn't give away the ball, which is obviously massive for Scotland. Something they probably needed in the first game, but kind of get Steve Clarke's, you know, team selection, because those were the boys who got him to, you know, the major tournament. So they kind of, you know, almost deserve the reward to start the first game.
Yeah, we had an England midfield overshadowed, Shane, by a Scottish midfield. Excellent performance.
Absolutely. I suppose the first thing I'd say is David's more forgiving of Steve Clarke than I am there. I sat down to watch that game last, what was it, Monday, and I absolutely cursed him from a height when I saw the team sheet, because I was literally sitting down to watch Billy Gilmore. Like, this was my only reason for watching the game. I just think he's a joy to watch. So he is. I couldn't believe he left them out. And look, when you see the style of play they went with and how direct it was, I suppose you figure out fairly quickly then why it was. So I'm delighted that he did have a change of heart and try and play a bit more ball last night. I mean, it's a midfield, John, unfortunately, that the likes of us can only really dream of at the moment, isn't it? I mean, it's a really, really good combination of qualities within a trio as well. They're extremely, extremely well balanced. Gilmore, McTominay and McGinn. I mean, McGinn is... I have a sweet spot for McGinn. We went to, on our pro license, we went on our club visit to St Mirren. I actually saw John McGinn make his professional debut. He came on as a 16-year-old for St Mirren the weekend we were over there. So I've kind of been keeping an eye on him all along. He's just progressed into such a fantastic player as well. And I mean, at that level, McTominay, you know, I'm sure he has his detractors, but he does a really, really good job. So he does. Now, I know they use him in different role, but I still think that's, if they could get that trio, they're three midfielders that we could only kind of dream of have based on our the way our options are at the moment. But yeah, they were as David has said, they were absolutely super last night, full value. And you can't talk about England without talking about the obvious, which is Harry Kane is just such a big concern for them at the moment.
Why is that, Shane? What's happened?
I don't know. I know it's obvious to say, but is he fit? Like, is he fit? It's really, really hard to see him playing as poorly as he is at the moment if he is fully fit. He just doesn't look to have that drive. I'd like to know what instructions he's been given, because as we know with Harry, like, he's pretty much as good as a number 10 as he is a number 9, but depending on what the game plan is, you need to get that balance right. If he's dropping deep because he's been told to drop deep, well and good, but I think they need to have a bit more penetration in behind. If he's dropping deep when he's been told to stay high, well, then there's a bit of an issue there. But yeah, they look, again, I wouldn't write him off yet. He's the sort of fella who could go out and bang in 2 or 3 in the last group game and ignite and still finish the tournament as a top goal scorer. But at the moment, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case.
Yeah, are we overreacting to this a little bit? It's they're going to be in the last 16. They're going to qualify. There's still a big knockout phase to come. Or are these deeper worries now about England's real chances of winning this thing? That was the hope and the expectation, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, look, I definitely wouldn't be writing them off, but they haven't been wonderful so far. There's no doubt. I don't really understand. You said about Deschamps being kind of very pragmatic and maybe not letting them off the leash. I think that could nearly be more so said about Southgate at the moment. I mean, he's got how many, four or five, well, I think it's back down to four since Trent dropped out, but he's got four full backs in the squad, all of whom are really, really good at bombing on and causing big trouble when they get forward playing for the clubs in the Premier League. And I don't know, they seem to be, you know, there seems to be really, really restrained conditions placed on them. They don't seem to be playing for England in the manner that they do for their clubs at all. I can't really understand that side of it either. But look, they have the quality. They just need to, it needs to gel. I wouldn't be writing off their chances at the moment, though.
But how can it be a case, Johnny, at a major tournament that England can be so dull and lifeless?
Yeah, I expect them to beat Scotland, to be honest, JD. I was at the Galway United Cavintilly game last night now, so I was watching the England game kind of the background, particularly the second half. What amazed me was, like, pound for pound, Scotland probably had better chances in the game. I'm a massive fan of McTominay, I have to say. I think, like as Shane says, Ireland have major issues in midfield. We simply don't have the players in midfield at the moment, and even if we had one like Declan Rice or McTominay, or that it would be a massive benefit for us. But I thought, you know, the English crowd last night, I think, needs to be commented on as well. You're not going to win a tournament if your home fans are like getting at your back after two games in which they've 4 points. Like, they're doing okay, they're going to get out of the group, but I think that the lack of chances they created would be a major issue, because they're going to be taking on far better teams in Scotland. And this is such a deep tournament. It was pointed out to me during the week, ironically, by an English person, that it's probably harder to win the Euros than the World Cup at the moment. And that actually adds up, because there are so many strong teams in Europe that can get in, whereas it's harder to get into the World Cup. And looking at England last night, I mean, if England were to take on a kind of a cagey, maybe defensive team like Spain or France, who are able to sit back, like, do England have the penetration there? And the other thing was, Scotland created chances. You know, they really did. They could easily have gotten the 3 points in the game. And England looked really, really flat. It was what I watched, particularly the second half, and from a very early stage it was like they're not going to win this. They're not creating anything. And the Kane situation is interesting, because when you've so much pace on the counter but your main striker is probably holding you back in that regard, what's Southgate going to do? And I think nearly there were twin concerns last night. They created nothing and the crowd were getting at their back already, and that's not good.
David, where do you want to start with England?
How long have I got, JD?
Another hour and 40 minutes.
I don't think Harry Kane's fit. I think all this talk before that, you know, the tournament of he wants to leave, or does he want to leave, or does he not want to leave, that interview he did with Gary Neville on the overlap, I don't think that's helping his situation. I think he's used to playing in a particular way with Tottenham, where he kind of has the freedom to drop in when he wants, or go beyond if he wants. Because, of course, he's got the two wide men, and obviously Son, who always plays, if it's Bergwijn, Lamella, Bale, whoever, Lucas Moura, they always get forward. So he has that, you know, time to make passes. I think Sterling, okay, was good the first game, considering he's just come off the back of a relatively poor season by his standards. I think Phil Foden has been missing in both games. I know a lot of people in the press in England over here said, I couldn't believe Southgate took him off. But someone who's so dynamic in the games, Manchester City in the Champions League, I thought he's had, you know, two quiet games, and I wasn't surprised he went off. And just, you know, there was a lot of hype and talk after the Croatia game about their midfield, how Rice and Phillips had, you know, dominated the game. But like Shane said there last night, you know, Scotland overran them. Everything, you know, their hunger, their desire, even their, you know, winning second balls, taking control of the game, was really an eye-opener for a lot of English people, because obviously, look, every time a major tournament comes around, English fans get excited. We hear all the chants of it's coming home. I've no problem with that, really. But I think last night was a real eye-opener from where they're at. I think Garrett has so much, you know, so much incredible, talented players at his disposal, but I don't think he knows his best 11 or how to squeeze them all in. Like the original first game against Croatia, it was a very professional performance, but they never really... They didn't really dominate the game. You know, Croatia huffed and puffed, all right, but that's an aging squad. I was very disappointed with them. And again, like, you kind of got the gist of it after, you know, the first 5 or 10 minutes that, you know, Scotland were in the game with the tempo they played. And England, for all the firepower they have, they lacked, you know, that bit of creativity or somewhere. And it's even hard for me to say that with the amount of, you know, talented players they have. But they just never really looked like scoring. Okay, people can highlight Mason Mount's shot. Won the second half and the first half, you know, John Stones is header. But besides that one shot and target against Scotland, you know, it's poor. But at the same time, they've got 4 points. They play the Czechs next week. If they beat them, they can top the group. Whether or not they want to obviously finish second, who knows? But at the same time, I asked this question. I was doing some work yesterday, and I asked this question. If I asked any one of you three, who did France play in their group, you know, in the World Cup in 2018, nobody remembers. So.
Australia, Peru, and...
All right, Jamie. Is that right?
Fair enough. I only know that because I was there, so...
Okay. Yeah, but at the same time, you get the gist of what I'm saying. Nobody remembers the, you know, the group games. And if they come through and they get into the last 16, that's when the tournament will really start for England. That's where they, need to perform.
Can I just ask you, though, David, if you look at, we'll say, the Scottish crowd for the game against their first game, which they lost 2-0, fair enough. So, like, they didn't play that well against Czech. That was grand. But the crowd was really behind them. And, like, what I noticed last night was the Scottish fans were really behind the English team, the Scottish team. And if you have the background of England with the friendlies and the knee and all that kind of in the background, do you think that is an issue for a player where you're like, well, are the fans even really behind me here? Whereas Scotland, like, their fans were, it was obviously an away day for them. They could come down to London and have a day out, but they really got behind the Scotland team. You look at the togetherness of the Italy fans and the Italy team, which looks special at the moment. For me, then, like, would that be a concern if you're playing with England? Because, like, they're clearly going to get on their back again.
I don't think it's a concern, no, because the way I look at it, I agree with you. Look, the Scotland fans are always going to come down in their numbers. Do you know what I mean? There wasn't even that many of them at the game, as opposed to how many were actually scattered around London. But, like, I think the Scottish are similar to the Irish. The Welsh are very good as well. We all get behind our nation. We support our team. You know, win, lose, or draw, they turn up in their numbers and they really drive the team forward. I think with England, besides the World Cup campaign where, look, they didn't beat too many great teams, and, you know, the Tunisia, Panama, and all those, that was kind of, you know, everyone kind of got a bit excited and there was kind of a feel-good factor. And you've seen all the ex, you know, pros who were on the telly, the Gary Nevilles, etc., always saying Gareth is doing something really well. I just always find, Johnny, with England, it's just waiting. It's like almost an Arsenal fan who's watching the game is waiting for a Chelsea player to mess up. A Liverpool fan is waiting for a Manchester United player to mess up so they can, you know, or a Manchester City player, Man United fans waiting. I think they're just desperate for, like, you know, the players of, you know, their rival teams, they support their club teams. They're just desperate for them not to do well. And I think that's a huge problem that England have. You just knew it last night that once England, you know, didn't go well, or, you know, a few passes didn't go right, that the fans were going to turn on them. You know, that we're very fortunate in Ireland that, you know, in Scotland the same, that they just get behind the team. I don't think England have that, and there's always been a problem with that.
Still Hungary won France nil, by the way, in the Euros. What was he doing with the full backs, David?
Well, it was always going to be an interesting one. I was quite curious to know, like, when I saw the team that he obviously selected against Croatia, I said, okay, you know, Trippier is more probably defensively solid. That won't bomb as far forward as, say, the other boys, Luke Shaw or Ben Chilwell. So he's gone for someone more solid, he said, with the experience with Tyrone Mings alongside him. Kyle Walker, okay, didn't have an impressive first half. I thought he was much better in the second half. Not like it would have been too hard for a player of his ability. But then to kind of switch the two of them was kind of like, okay, you know, I've seen different people say you've got a more naturally left-footed player. But it didn't really work. You know, Luke Shaw didn't. He tried to get forward. He tried to join in, but there was no spaces for him to overlap or do anything. Rhys James, we know, is an excellent delivery of the ball. I've seen that time, you know, week in, week out with Chelsea. There's only one cross he put into Harry Kane that was 2-3 yards in front of him. Could have been debatably offside if he'd actually put it on target or in the goal. But we didn't see that work. So it's going to be like the massive thing now is, right, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Gareth going into the game against Czech Republic. He'll want to win it regardless of, you know, if they play runners-up with France and Portugal and those boys. Or I think it's the other one, if they finish second, they play Sweden, Slovakia or Spain's group. But I think he needs to put out a team to find a balance to, you know, get fans back on side. Because I don't think they'll accept another draw.
Does that mean throw in Grealish?
Yeah, I think he has to start. It can also be a bad case in that whenever, you know, that performance was flat till Grealish came on, and then he looks like he gets on the ball and he's trying to make something happen, then everyone kind of, you know, jumps on that. It'd be interesting to see if he does make changes. I think he should leave Harry Kane out. I think he should give him probably, you know, a rest until the last 16 game. Just kind of clear his head and get himself up to fitness, give him that 2-3 days of no training just to kind of calm himself down. And, you know, give someone like Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, start from the front and lead him, you know, leave him lead the line. I'd play Grealish. I'd even give Phil Foden a rest. And I'd just change it up a little bit to kind of bring back a bit of a buzz to make these fellas feel that they're not untouchable. Griezmann's just scored, hasn't he?
He has indeed. And a classic French goal as well.
I'll tell you what, JD, if I'm not counting my money on Mbappe as player of the tournament already, I just don't know. The man is an absolute...
You have so much sympathy for the fullback there, haven't you? Like, because what's he going to do? Like, one-on-one against Mbappe in the box.
And fair play to Hugo Lloris for all the footballers that they have. Look, he collected the ball and he spotted that the Hungarian backline was pretty much on the halfway line. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if the Hungarian backline's on the halfway line, just booted in behind him. And off went Roadrunner, and he turned the poor fullback inside out before picking out Griezmann. It's route one at its finest, but it's still absolute genius from Mbappe again.
Do you remember the video of Deschamps in the dressing room at halftime when they won the last tournament? He was just like, gives the ball to Killian. That was basically it. And it was like, that's what they do.
Not a bad impression, Johnny. Not bad.
Lovely French accent, Johnny.
Yeah, working on it.
Griezmann has never missed a competitive game under Deschamps in the 7 years that he's been there. And that's the thing, isn't it, David? Like, if it's not Mbappe, if it's not Conte, if it's not Pogba, if it's not somebody else, it's someone like Griezmann who can finish it off.
Yeah, well, he was top scorer in Euro 2016. Yeah. I actually heard that stat earlier as well. I think this is his 35th competitive game in a row under Deschamps. I think that would make it 15 goals. Just remarkable. Obviously takes great pride in playing for France, always fit and available, which is a big thing. You know, he's a wonderfully gifted player. And the way he kind of has that balance, like you said, like if Mbappe's not firing, of course Killian's more electric, he kind of wants to get the ball and drive, whereas Griezmann's kind of that intricate, wants to drop the shoulder, come inside, make those passes like Shane spoke about putting him in a while ago. He's a wonderfully talented player.
5-3-1-0-6 about goal celebrations, because we had a lovely one in the first half there of the France game, the Hungary game, from Attila Fiola, 5-3-1-0-6. Fabio Grosso did a very fine Tardelli Mark II in the 0-6 semi, says Tom. And Charlie Nicholas, first goal against Rangers, the commentator. Look at the absolute delight on his face. Scottish accent, obviously.
Bad, JD.
Yeah, this is we don't want to turn this into an accent show. But David, Gareth Southgate, what is the sense about him in the game? Because when I look at Gareth Southgate, I think brilliant PR, lovely man, on the right side of social issues, for example. England are very likable. But then I look at someone like Mancini and I look at Southgate. I look at Southgate, Middlesbrough, 12th, 13th, relegated. Wasn't brilliant with the under-21s. Did get them to the World Cup semi-finals. But is he a man that knows game management? Because at the moment, I think there's a question mark about that.
I agree with you. He's the likable choice. I think you'd struggle to find someone who doesn't really like him. Of course, if you're fresh off the game last night, then people will be a bit jumping at him. But I think, look, he's done an incredible job at England. He has made the team more likable. Of course, people were quick to bring up his management, Middlesbrough or whatever. I think the 21s is always more of a development to try and get players into the first team as quickly as you can. I just feel like it was very interesting to listen to him last night after the game. He said, you know, the players got it wrong and, you know, the backroom staff and the management got it wrong. So at least he's able to acknowledge that, because... You know, substitutes, he made two substitutes last night. They didn't seem to work, you know, the team selection. So that's why I'm very intrigued to see JD, what he does do against the Czechs, because it's going to be under pressure for him now to play Grealish from the start. And then if he does play Grealish from the start and he has, say, an incredible game and he's man the match, then he's under pressure to play him all the time. But it was just a lot of, you know, stuff, obviously, with the fullbacks. You know, there's all this stuff he's got to, like, there's no getting away from it. You know, the English manager's or the English senior manager's job is one of the toughest jobs to have. The pressure from the media in England is unbelievable. But, you know, Gareth's, you know, he's been around for a long time. He's well used to that. And I think, you know, the majority of English fans I know and spoken to, they're happy with him. They were obviously just very disappointed with the performance in the game and how it went last night.
Who else is in that managerial setup for England?
Steve Holland, isn't it?
Steve Holland, Chelsea. Yeah,
You look like we again, JD, just coincidentally on the pro license, we had Gareth Southgate. We went out to Nyon in Switzerland for a week of the pro license, and Gareth Southgate was one of the guest speakers out there. What are we talking about? 10 years ago, thereabouts maybe. And I'd say he's a really, really good man at building team unity amongst players and building relationships with players and kind of, you know, I'd say he's very good in a one-on-one chat with a player and all of that kind of stuff. So he has got some really, really good qualities. He came across very, very impressive in that presentation to us, that's for sure. But you always look at a managerial setup and you want, you know, you want your yin and yang, you want your counterbalance. What are the strengths of the manager? Okay, well, what are his weaknesses? Can we find an assistant manager, or can we find somebody who has those strengths that he might lack? And, you know, I think with a guy with a real tactical brain as an assistant manager who's maybe pushing him to make those decisions could be a perfect balance. I don't know, does Holland do that enough for him? But look, he definitely has his strengths, but yeah, his tactical awareness is probably letting him down a little bit, Harry.
So what do we do then, Shane, against Czech Republic if you're a coach looking to set up a team here?
Yeah, I can't see how why he wouldn't let the fullbacks off the leash. I really, really can't. I don't think they need to be that conservative. Like, I know we're probably going to chat about the Italians a bit as we go along, but Spinazzola, I think it is, your man's name, playing fullback for them. I mean, he's absolutely bombing on. Like, he's essentially playing as a fifth attacker for them, because they seem to play with the winger on that side always kind of drifts inside, and he's bombing on, and he's such a threat for them. He's fantastic, and there's a few other fullbacks doing that quite well, and it's not like England don't have the players to do that. They absolutely do. 100% they do. And yeah, you'd be very, very surprised if Grealish isn't pitched in. Who loses out for him? I don't know. It is possibly Foden, who obviously had a brilliant end to the season. But look, the big one is Harry Kane. I think he still will stick with Harry Kane. I think he'll try and play him into form rather than rest him. But it'll be interesting to see, yeah.
Okay, you've got to take a break. David Myler, Shane Keegan and Johnny Ward on OTB Football Saturday. 53106, if you want to text us, how did you feel about watching the England-Scotland game last night? Who are your team that you think is going to win the European Championship? You can get in touch. Hungary 1, France 1 is the latest score. We're back after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 10k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock. Speaking about the beautiful game of football, with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international. Shane Keegan, the football coach and the broadcaster and journalist. Johnny Ward are with us. Hungary won, France won in the Euros. Griezmann has equalised for the French. We got Portugal and Germany coming up at 5 o'clock. And on that, David, how did you feel Germany played the other night? Do we maybe write them off too soon in the Euros, given all the talented players they have? Do you expect they can cause Portugal some issues today?
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. I don't know who we is. I didn't write Germany off.
It's the vernacular.
I know, but I know they had a disappointing last tournament or whatever. I just think you can never write the Germans off. Joachim Löw obviously brought back in Hummels and Müller. Of course, there's, you know, concerns over Hummels and his pace and whatever, but it's just that know-how and experience to have him around the camp. I think they're just probably desperate for someone to put the ball in the back of the net. They did create a lot of chances the other night.
They didn't, David, did they?
Well, I probably an exaggeration. They created a few chances, kind of half chances. But if they had a Miroslav Klose, they'd have probably got a goal. Do you know what I mean? That's the way I'm kind of looking at it. I think they can cause Portugal problems. They certainly have good players in their team. Be interesting what way he lines up. Obviously, Kimmich played right wing back the other day, but second half he started to drift more into midfield, where he predominantly plays for Munich. So, be interesting what way he lines up. But I definitely do think they can cause Portugal problems. Yeah.
Do Portugal have the right shape, Shane?
Look, they've got an abundance of attacking talent. That's for sure. And trying to figure out how to get the most of them is a challenge. Like, you look at somebody like Bernardo Silva, certainly didn't look wonderful the other night. I mean, for long periods, they looked like they were really going to struggle. Now, look, again, look how hungry you're doing here. I suppose we were kind of looking at that game and going, even though they won 3-0 in the end, the two other goals were so late and they struggled for such a long period. We were saying we were kind of judging them on having done poorly against what we thought was a really weak team. Now, maybe we need to readjust that a little bit, looking at how hungry you've done here yet again. But I mean, in that four of Jota, Silva, Fernandez, Ronaldo, I mean, you know, I France is probably the only one that man for man is more exciting. It's a really, really good front four. And Fernandez is probably one of the very few out-and-out number 10s in the tournament, actually. If you go through the different teams, there's very few that are operating with that out-and-out 10. But look, I think it'll be a really, really interesting game. A really, really interesting game. Look, again, I suppose the only thing that plays down the hype round, it's just a pity that it's not a two-team qualifier. Now you're in for an absolute cracking game. Look, in all reality, no matter what the scoreline is, you still end up with the two of them coming out, and that just takes away from the game a little bit for me, you know.
5-3-1-0-6 on great goal celebrations, because we had a really good one in the Hungary-France game. Great show, lads. Great goal celebrations. Roger Osborne's winner for Ipswich in 1978. He got so excited he had to be subbed. Well, it was the winner in a 1-0 win for Ipswich against Arsenal. Bobby Robson back then. The Ronaldo legacy. Did you play against Ronaldo, David?
I did.
And
I did.
What was the...
I played against him, if you remember, when Portugal beat us. I think it was 4-1. James McLean scored over New York. It was before the World Cup in 2014, I believe. He was kind of carrying a knock. He only played an hour. You could see though, JD, when he pick up the ball, he's goal hungry. Anytime he got near the goal, he wanted to shoot. He's not looking to pass anyone. I think, like, kind of obvious, really, because you look at his records of the amount of goals he scored across all the leagues he's played in internationally. I still think he's three off Aldaí, is he? Am I right in saying
that? That's right, yeah.
Which you imagine he'll probably break in no time. Just phenomenal athlete. You know, right foot, left foot, his physique, his ability to, you know, jump in the air, his heading ability, everything. He's a perfectly molded footballer. He's remarkable, you know, to think at his age that he's still turning out, you know, these kind of performances. He's just a man who loves the headlines. You know that when the going gets tough, if Cristiano gets a chance, he'll more than likely score. It's remarkable that he's been able to do it for so long.
Yeah, I wonder what his legacy will be in 10 or 20 years' time, lads. 36 years of age, 106 international goals, as you say, 5 Ballon d'Or awards, 11 goals of the Euros. It's the preening that kind of gets me. It's like when Jota didn't square from the other day and he could have killed him. You know, it was.
He actually suffered, I believe he suffered homophobic abuse, actually, from some of the fans at the game. You know, some of the Hungarian fans haven't obviously covered themselves in glory, but like between him and Pepe, they're 36, I think, and 38. And to be playing, I mean, at the level football is at the moment, the amount of games they play, what Ronaldo has done is utterly incredible. Like, he's still playing at a really, really high level in terms of his own. Like, he's not the player he was, understandably, but as David says, his hunger for goals, and I would say it's next to impossible to have the longevity that he has. I don't really know what he's done. Maybe he's a the way he's minded himself in his career, David, or what it is, but like I can't. How do you play at that level, at the top level? I know Ibrahimovic is maybe an outlier as well, but Ronaldo's a different gravy again to be doing that at 36. But if Portugal were to win the tournament with Pepe and Ronaldo, I mean, that would defy everything we know about football.
Of course, and like you said, the ages of the two of them. You know, Pepe, we've seen him in the Champions League, whatever the performances he was putting in. You're kind of going, wow, like. Even the Italians, I know, we'll get on to with their two centre-halves, you know, Mancini bringing back in Cellini, like, to think, wow. I just think, you know, Ronaldo, you often hear about the time he was at United. You've heard all the players he played with saying that he was the first lad to hire his own personal doctor, nutritionist, chef, you know, physio. Just all, like, it just seems to be he is so destined to be the greatest that he takes. Like, he takes every step. If somebody recommends something to him, he's looking at it. Like, you just hear so many different examples. And like, I even heard one the other day that even the way he sleeps 4 times a day for 3 hours or something like that, to make sure that he maximizes the amount of sleep his body can get. he breaks his days up, and then if he's up at, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, he's in the gym practicing something. It's just all this stuff, Johnny, that you just think, like, fair play. Like, that mental strength, that desire, you know, to acknowledge that and to go after it, and then, of course, achieve it is enough. Like, we can all say we want to do something, but this fella has said it. Even if you remember back, I always find it funny, that interview he did at an awards do with Rio Ferdinand Anderson, and they're asked who's the greatest player of all time, and Rio says Maradona, and then Ronaldo, he's only a young boy, United, I imagine he's 22, 23, and he says me. And to think, like, at that point of his career, to go on to what he achieved, obviously, mainly in his last year at United, and then certainly what he did at Real Madrid, of course, what he's done with Portugal, it's phenomenal. I don't think anyone can really describe him enough, like, because what he's done is unheard of.
It's interesting just as well that we'll say he and, like, Maradona, they both came from poverty, really. You know, they were probably real street footballers at a very early age, and you wonder, did that contribute to their greatness as well? Because kids aren't really like that anymore.
Well, it was the washing machine was on top of the roof, wasn't it, with Cristiano Ronaldo? That was the thing. And was it Madeira, was it?
Madeira, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, he did come from an impoverished... He's named after Ronald Reagan, which is one of the bizarre piece of information about Cristiano Ronaldo.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, so his dad was a big Ronald Reagan fan. How do we call it then, Portugal, Germany? Looking forward to this at 5 o'clock. Any verdicts, lads, on this one?
I'd give Germany a great chance myself anyway. Sorry, Shane. I think they showed promise against France. They don't really I know it's a cliche, but you just cannot write Germany off in tournaments like this. They generally just they have an unbelievably consistent record. And I think, as much as, I mean, Pepe is not a likable character, but, like, if you're playing a defender at 38, you got to exploit some weaknesses in their defense. He has Ruben Dias beside him, but I'd give Germany every chance. I think they showed enough against France. They didn't create as much, I think, as David said, but some of their play was good.
Yeah, and what they've got, and we're seeing it. We might obviously touch on it with Belgium as well. Is because of obviously with the amount of changes that you're allowed to make now, that strength in depth, particularly in the final third, is just so useful. If you can be bringing on a player in the final third who's got an X factor about him when the opposition's bodies are starting to tire a little bit, and Germany have that. In fairness, they have that. You know, I think Werner came on for them the last night. Sané came on for them the last night. They've got lots of options in the final third, and I think I think they will do quite well in the tournament overall, to be honest. Yeah, and I do think they'll possibly get the result tonight.
David, how do you call it?
Ronaldo, you just can't write them off, can you? You can't. Like, I expect Germany to go out and perform. Obviously, they'll be disappointed to lose to France, not to get anything from the game, because they did have the lion's share possession. So I'm expecting a bigger performance from Germany, but that's why I say you just can't write Portugal off with Ronaldo. If he gets chances, he'll score. So
who can you write off, David?
Well,
Cork in the hurling. Cork in the hurling.
Who would you write off with the big teams, actually? Say if six teams can win this tournament, who would you write off?
England, Netherlands, Spain.
You'd write off Spain?
Yeah, they don't. Possession's one thing, Johnny, but you need to put the ball in the back of the net. And, like, even watch them the other night. Morata. It just doesn't look like he's going to score. You know, I think England, the pressure will get to those players. The Netherlands, I think, are too weak at the back. You know, I think that group has been good. The games have been good against Ukraine and whatever. There's been a bit of excitement in those. Enjoyed watching them, but I just don't see them progressing too far once they come up against France, Portugal, you know, one of those teams. I think they won't have enough. I'll go 2-2 tonight. I'm expecting Germany to score 2 goals.
Would you have said, David, before the tournament, before you saw England in those first 2 games, that you would have ruled them out before the tournament as well?
I expect them to go far. I don't see them winning. I don't know what it is. It's almost like I'm looking at them from the outside. Maybe there's a mental block or something. I think, can that group of players deliver? Now, look, I could be eating my words in 4 weeks' time. You never know what could happen, but I just don't know. I just don't see it. And certainly last night, has kind of probably put it back to me that there's issues, there's problems. You know, Harry Kane, we're taunting, he looks leggy, he doesn't look fit. You know, Sterling, okay, last night wasn't great. Croatia was good. But even Rashford coming on doesn't look at it. So I just don't know, JD. I'm not confident about England.
Who's the player, though? Go on.
The big problem they have, JD, as well, like with David saying that he still sees them going far. I don't think they are going to go far, because I'm pretty sure that the way the draw is made, I think the most likely first knockout game is going to be against whoever finishes second in this group.
That's if they win the group. If they're second in the group, they'll probably play Sweden or the team that's second in the other group.
You'd certainly be trying to orchestrate that situation then somehow, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, but I'm just interested, who are the leaders, who are the players like now that need to go into that dressing room and just lay down the law on the England setup? Because that's, I think, a bit of leadership is probably required now.
Yeah, I don't know if there are. I really don't know if there are any kind of real natural leaders. I think that is possibly one of the issues with them. I don't know who does that kind of thing. You need to be, I suppose, the thing with Keane, obviously, the whole time was that he could lay down the law because he was always the top performing player in the dressing room at the same time, or certainly amongst the top performing players in the dressing room. So I suppose you're naturally looking at Harry Kane, but how the hell does Harry Kane go in and lay down the law when he's the one who's been most disappointing so far? So that weakens his voice. I don't know who can grab the dressing room by the scruff of the neck like that, you know?
It's also, you're looking probably, in my opinion, you're looking at Harry Kane, Jordan Henderson, Harry Maguire. You know, they're kind of, obviously Harry's the English captain, Jordan's captain of Liverpool, Harry's captain of Manchester United. But then two of those three players aren't playing. Like, Harry Kane's not playing well, so it's not a case that you can kind of go in and say, come on, like, and then somebody can turn around and you go, well, you're not playing, or, well, you need to look after yourself first, which is a tough one. So, look, that's why I'm very curious to see what way he'll go, Gareth, next game, because he needs to give them a bit of a shock, a little, you know, these experienced ones or the older ones, the ones who probably feel like they should be starting every game, they'll wake up and say, like, look, you're not untouchable, you can be dropped. Like, the first question that was thrown to Harry Kane after the game was, like, how did you feel about coming off? Probably the question was asked differently, like, but...
Yeah, okay.
That was thrown to him in the kind of way, like, as in, you probably feel like you shouldn't be coming off. And look, obviously he gave the great footballing answer of, like, I have to respect the manager's decision, but
okay,
that's the big one, isn't it?
Got to take a break. Thanks, David Myler, Johnny Ward, Shane Keegan, back with Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power's Save Our Game. A cane brace will bag 20k for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. gamblingcare.ie.
You are very welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until five, joined by the former Republic of Ireland international David Myler, the UEFA Pro Licence coach Shane Keegan, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Our coverage thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Text on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation as well, so you can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Just to give you some scores, France have been held to a 1-1 draw by Hungary in the Euros. So France have got 4 points now. Hungary have got one. Attila Fiola put Hungary in front in the first half before Antoine Griezmann equalised for France in the second half. Ireland 43, Tonga 0 full-time in the men's sevens repechage in Monaco. And the Hurling League, Division 3A, round 5. Sligo 21 points, Monaghan 19 points is a full-time score. And in Division 3A, full-time Armagh 125, Tyrone 219, so a win for Armagh in that one. Just on tonight's games, Spain against Poland, 8 o'clock in Seville. You were saying there before the break about Morata. So surely Moreno should start up front tonight, shouldn't he? 23 goals in La Liga last season. It's a bit of a no-brainer, David.
No, definitely. Morata had a fair few chances against Sweden. Just, I don't know what it is with him. Unfortunately, he just doesn't fill you with confidence, does he, when he goes through on goal? Like the one, it was a glorious one, I don't know what minute it was, where he didn't even hit the target, and you're just thinking, you've got to be scoring that. And that's probably been the problem with his, you know, career, albeit he's had, you know, he's played for some wonderful clubs and had great moves. You'd expect Moreno, you know, to come back in. It'll be interesting to see what Luis Enrique does. Obviously, you know, Busquets is back as well, so I'd expect the two of them to come straight into the squad.
Are they an enjoyable watch, lads, Spain? I find them frustrating to watch because I feel that they go around the roundabout all day and just keep on driving around the roundabout. There's no cutting edge. There's no. It's gone to the nth degree of just pass.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the thing with them previously is, I mean, they haven't actually had that many prolific strikers, but it was kind of death by a thousand cuts, kind of, when they were winning the three tournaments back-to-back, wasn't it? They just had so much of the ball and so many continuous attacks, whereas now, yeah, the possession just looks a bit more sterile now than it did when you had the incisiveness of, you know, pass, but then, you know, after five or six passes, all of a sudden Iniesta dances around three or four of them and produces a bit of magic or something like that. Yeah, at the moment it's a little bit more like a carousel that's just not kind of going anywhere in particular.
Poland ordinary against Slovakia, David. Lewandowski, I don't think he's really the type of player to carry a team on his own in that way. Now, they did have a man sent off, but you'd have to think of the heat of Seville, they're going to struggle tonight.
No, you're right. Of course, no, he's obviously exceptional. He's probably the best number nine in the world, but he's not playing with the same level of talent he has at Bayern Munich with Poland. Just expect a bit more kind of fight with them, you know, a bit more oomph in them, which they lacked the last day. But he's not the one to lead the, like, you know, to carry them all and by himself. The players need to be able to, you know, create and produce chances for him. You could see him getting frustrated anytime he kind of got the ball in around the box. He was trying to swivel and shoot, probably taking the wrong options on. It's going to be a very difficult evening for them.
What about the Welsh, David? Can they ruffle feathers again? It looks like they're going to be in the last 16. Great win the other night against Turkey, vastly improved against the Swiss. And maybe Turkey are just very poor in this Euros and it wasn't expected that they would be. But Ramsey and Bale, form is temporary, class is permanent in this situation anyway. Maybe not in the club situation, but in this situation.
You know what, JD? They've been probably my underdogs or my, you know, favourite team to kind of almost watch. Obviously, I'd had the pleasure of playing against them numerous times and obviously had a great success in 2016, and the squad they have now is very much different than that. You know, with the, I know Chris Gunter says still a boat. You've then lost Ashley Williams. You know, they've kind of lost Robson Kanu as well, who played a lot. There's been quite a few players. It's been a big transition for them. I know, you know, Bale, Allen, and Ramsey have stayed, but these young boys coming through have really, you know, stepped up to the mark for them. And I thought, you know, against Turkey, they were brilliant, really worked really hard. Even against the Swiss, you know, they made it very difficult for them. And, you know, it's as much as, look, I'm former Irish international and, you know, we played against Wales and I want Ireland to be there. I don't mind, you know, Wales and Scotland doing well. And you know, they were very good entertainment the other night. And of course, like you said, their form is temporary. You know, we know Gareth Bale is an exceptional player. Albeit he's not what he used to be, but you know, he's produced the goods. You know, the first assist to Ramsey is an incredible pass. He tried it two or three times beforehand and Ramsey probably should have scored, but then the second assist he has, you know, when you any other player is probably thinking keep it in the corner, but then he just sees a, you know, an opportunity arise, he picks out Tyler Roberts and they score. And you know, they've been really good, and I think they will ruffle a few feathers because they're a good, honest, hard-working side with, you know, a couple of special players in there.
Yeah, I was wondering, Shane, with Daniel James, like, I'm really excited watching him play. I love those fast wingers down the touchline, and you wonder maybe a different club might be a better fit for him next season, because he's got a good degree of talent that you wouldn't want to see hidden, Van de Beek style.
He has. Yeah, he has, Jed. There's a lot of similarities between himself and Gareth Bale, really, isn't there? But, like, that Welsh group, they kind of almost remind me of kind of the old style Ireland kind of get together, in that they strike me as fellas who really look forward to coming together. You know, life might be going wonderfully for them at their club, you know, pointing case with Daniel James, with Gareth Bale. You just get a sense from them that they're all really looking forward to meeting up for international breaks and that kind of stuff. They seem to you know, a break away from the club suits them, and I think they genuinely look like guys who get on very, very well. There's a real, real kind of unity about them. And they are, partly because of that and because they work so hard for each other, and then just because of the X factor of the two lads. I mean, Kiefer Moore is... is what Kiefer Moore is. Like, it's, you know, it's a battering ram to create room for the other three to try and go and exploit the space. But in terms of wanting to be more than, not even more than the sum of your parts, just fellas knowing their roles and saying, yeah, look, we'll do this shift and we'll do that. And you know, we understand that we have three players here of extreme quality. Okay, how can we, what's the best way to set up the other eight around those three players to get the most from them? And that's the manager's job. And I think he's done it very, very well.
Did you see Wales here tonight, Johnny?
Yeah, you know, I think Turkey were really disappointing. I thought, I've been to a game in Baku when the Dundalk played, and I thought the Welsh players had really struggled in that heat. I think it was like 28 degrees, if not more, and none of it at all. And I'm like David, I've kind of embraced him now as probably the team to follow at the tournament, you know. And it's an important point that Shane makes. I mean, we saw it with David Healy as well at Northern Ireland, when he was never really doing a great deal for his club and would just score goals for Northern Ireland, that you don't necessarily need to be bombing it at club level. The understanding between Bale and Ramsey, I wasn't sure what Shane, in terms of like watching as a coach, was it down to Wales being good, or were Turkey that bad? Like, I thought, as much as they've been absolutely insipid going forward, like defensively they were so easily carved open as well, that I probably wouldn't like go overboard about Wales. But they have great togetherness, and you know, it's fantastic for them. There was an interesting article in The Currency today written by Dion Fanning about Ireland playing Wales when Stephen Ireland got that goal, and the very different paths that we've taken since as kind of organisations. But Welsh football is in a very good place.
Shane?
Yeah, no, like you say, Turkey have been awful. They have been awful. I got suckered in by all the journalists who I thought knew better than me and were tipping them as an outsider to really do
Wall charts and guide, Shane, all those pullouts, yeah.
That's it. I think it was the Racing Post one done me most, to be honest with you, JD. So it was, but like, let's be honest, Yilmaz was the only one I really knew anything about. Well, Sionchu, I suppose, at centre half as well. But no, they've been awful. Now look, again, because of the qualification format, they can still get out of the group, but I don't see them going very far. They haven't looked up to much, have they?
The thing with the Euros and all this like pullouts and wall charts and guides and expertise, and you're on transfer market every 5 minutes. I did walk past a shop the other day and I saw a packet of stickers and I was kind of tempted, and then I realised I shouldn't be doing this at 42 years of age. Should be getting things like vaccines and stuff.
Especially with your reputation as a national personality, JD, that would have been like, not only was it this like 42-year-old, but he's actually on Off the Ball talking about football every Saturday.
Yeah, it is a great education. I remember when I was a young lad, like collecting stickers was a brilliant education just in terms of knowledge. Obviously, the more sophisticated ways nowadays, but to actually fill a book costs hundreds of quid. David, do you have kids or relations who are into all this stuff?
My kids aren't into it yet. They're more into well done stickers and, you know, thank you stickers. We have family friends who've two young boys who are 8 and 11, and they're proper into it. You know, the Premier League sticker books. I remember, you know, for his birthday, my wife was like, "Oh, we need to buy him a present or whatever," and I said, "Oh, what do you usually spend on kids?" And she's like, "You know, £10 or £15 on the present." I just said, "Look, I know he's into his stickers," so I went and spent £15 on stickers. And he was just the delight in his face, opening up every packet, going through each one, which he had, which he didn't have. And he was like, "I can't wait to get back into school." And I just sat there, JD, smiling. And my wife was like, kind of going, "Why are you so happy?" And I said, it's a flashback to when I was, you know, 10, 11, you know, getting the Premier League books. I'd play a game at the weekend with College Corinthians. I remember if I scored, I'd say to my dad, "Can you get me some stickers?" Used to have a big, massive bundle with two elastic bands around you. Be in school, going through. I loved it. It's a great throwback. So even the 42-year-old yourself, I often think about it. I'm half tempted to do it now with my kids, to kind of give them that knowledge and look, something to look back on or reflect on. I still have. I remember obviously from the Euro 2016. We got a little package off the FAI. We had like little things in it, but we actually got a sticker book. Which was filled, which was quite nice, but quite disappointing at the same time, because there wasn't that kind of love of having to fill it, but it was already all filled for us. I think it was kind of like, you know, a little piece of memorabilia, but I still have mine. It's nice to look back on those things because every, well, they're not really young anymore, but every man, woman who was into football 20, 30 years ago, that was the thing, isn't it? You're getting the Merlin sticker books, trying to collect everything. It's great memories looking back and, you know, even talking about it.
They've got a great thing now, JD. My young lad is six, so he's the prime age for it. He's absolutely mad into it. And for his birthday there back in January, you can now actually send in, you can email them in a photo of yourself in this case being my six-year-old now. I didn't get a Panini card made of myself. but you send... Connor had full Dundalk kit on, let's say, at the time, and you send in the picture and they actually make up a card for you of your kid on the card and send you out a packet. And he absolutely loved that. Now, you can imagine, he absolutely loved it. It's a good idea. And for, you know, for parents who have kids that are mad into it, getting them a personalised one of themselves on the card is a brilliant little move.
That's really cool. And when you were a young lad, Shane, did you partake in this?
Hugely so, yeah. My first memory of it had been 1990 World Cup. You know, the old style ones that we used to have that were more the binders, wasn't it? Than a sticker book. And you had the various different sections of the binders. I think Dad still has it. He was doing a clear out of the loft there recently, and he pulled out a couple of things from back around that time. They were brilliant. They were absolutely brilliant. And I just, you know, I remember looking out, you'd be sitting at home and you'd be looking up at the clock during the summer waiting for Dad to finish work around 5. He'd get home around 5:30 and, you know, you're sitting, staring, waiting for the front door to open. So not because you missed Dad, but because you knew he was coming home with two packets for you. You know, who were you going to get in it? They were brilliant. The other thing from back then, JD, I don't know if you remember it. Again, just talking about Dad clearing out the loft, he pulled it out for me the other day. Was, do you remember when you used to have to collect the Mars bars and the stickers wrappers, all the different wrappers from the chocolate bars, and you sent them in, and then you got sent out a pin collection in a nice little case, a pin collection of the flags of all the different countries who were competing at it. He found our 1994 and our 96, Euro 96, I think, versions of those. They were another great little thing that were all the rage back then as well.
Listeners out there, 53106, if you want to get in touch on this, on collectibles or stickers and the Euros and the education of it. Johnny, were you one of these people?
I wasn't. I was kind of more reminded there of like the Kellogg's cornflakes and so on, where you collected all these tokens and you waited for days and days and days and it never arrived until it eventually did. But yeah, I do remember I think my earliest memory is the 1990 World Cup. And you know, we've spoken about this on the show before, but like, I suppose especially JD, the World Cup memories that we had last summer when we had to fill a schedule with memories or whatever, was just, these players were, you know, were unknown to us at the time. You know, when you were collecting these stickers, you saw a face for the first time. And you know, the way the world has changed now with the internet and all that, we're kind of familiar with the teams more so. But yeah, I think it's I suppose I had aspirations. I was talking about this at the Galway United game last night, that I got into journalism by writing for the Galway United match programme when I was 15 or 16. But the year that Manchester United won the league with kids, I kind of put together like a diary of the season, this massive big diary, like that every day or every week I had all the results, all the cutouts from the papers. And I love looking back on that. And for that, you know, 10 minutes that you're reading it, you are that 14, 15 year old kid again who was kind of dreaming that Liverpool would win the league or whatever. But it's great to have those mementos. And it's like, you know, everyone takes photos now on their phones, but nobody prints them. And, you know, it's not the same. You have that tangibility of the sticker book and all that. And if it has become seppy over time, that only adds to the beauty of it. And I think that's something we've lost with the ubiquitous nature of phones, because, you know, everyone has a camera now, but we don't really value photographs anymore.
We got the Portugal and Germany teams in here. Rui Patricio in goal for Portugal. Semedo, Pepe, Ruben Dias and Guerreiro. Danilo and William Carvalho. Bernardo Silva, Bruno Fernandes, Diogo Jota and Cristiano Ronaldo. Off the top of my head, that is an unchanged team. For Germany, Neuer, Ginter, Hummels and Rudiger. Klimic, Gundogan, Kroos and Gosens, Havertz, Muller and Gnabry. So Timo Werner is on the bench for Germany. I think that is also unchanged, but not 100%. We'll confirm that in just a second. These are the teams coming in. France and Hungary have drawn 1-1. Would your view of Italy have changed now, David, having watched the two games, than it would have been before the tournament? Because they are bloody impressive under Roberto Mancini. 29 games unbeaten, 10 games without conceding a goal. They've scored 6 goals. Can they go all the way?
JD, come on. You're not listening to the Monday mornings. I'm on with your and own.
It's the only day off now. The only day off to...
I tipped Italy to win it and Immobile to be top goal scorer.
There you go. I'm ashamed of myself for not hearing
that. Yeah. And I've been very impressive in their opening two games, albeit there's bigger tests ahead for them. But at the same time, there's a feel-good fact about Italy. You know, people were very... unsure of them coming into the side or into the tournament, sorry, about their side. And look, they've had two good wins. They'll probably rotate their squad now and prepare themselves for the last 16. I'm confident. It just seems to be a bit of a good buzz around, the Italian team. I saw an interview there not so long ago with Mancini and how he's responded now in Italy, that he's brought this togetherness back to the squad. Bringing Cellini certainly back in has been a big one. I know obviously he went off injured the other day. Whether that's big injury or not, it was just probably experience to kind of say, I felt something small there, get me off quickly. But they're moving in the right direction. And whichever of the major nations we might tip to win it, end up playing them later on in the competition, they're going to be in for a game because Italy are one hell of a team. And, I'm quietly confident about them.
And Shane and Johnny, would you have a similar opinion on that?
Yeah, I think they've been very, very good. They've been very, very good, that's for sure. And they seem to, if you go back to the problems that we have with the likes of England and Gareth Southgate, and does he know their best lineup? Does he know their best shape? Do they have a defined style of play? The answer probably been no to all three of those. It seems to be the exact opposite with Italy. It seems to be the exact opposite. Everybody knows exactly what their gig is. Everybody is well suited to perform in the role that they're being asked to perform. If a player comes out of the team, like you see with Verratti not there the other day and Lucchetti coming into the team in place of him, you don't come in and do your own thing. You come in and do what's required of the person who plays that role. And that's a really, really good sign for a team in a tournament like this, that everybody is on the same wavelength and is concerned with performing the role that needs to be performed for the overall structure to function, if that makes sense. So they look excellent, and look, it's so good to watch Chiellini and Bonucci just still doing their thing. They're fantastic, aren't they?
I totally agree, Shane. It's very hard not to warm to Italy as a footballing nation, what it means to them. And year in, year out, like particularly the art of the Italian defenders, those great defences of my youth, and when you see Chiellini at his age, I think that when they take on better opposition, I think they probably come up short. I'm not sure pound for pound there. I think France are the best team in the tournament, having watched them, especially the first game, obviously. But Italy have a great togetherness. The only thing is, like, it's such a drawn out tournament. It's like, you have 3 games to group, 4 more after that. It's you wonder how far that can take you. They do have that great kind of feeling with the crowd and Mancini and all that. I thought they're playing out from the back the last night against a better team. We'll definitely get them in trouble, and we'll see if they do that from their kickouts. But it's just great to see them. And if you don't have a soft spot for Italian football, you're certainly not Mick Wallace. But I don't think you're a football fan.
very good. Hungary won, France won a full time. There's an app for sticker books now, I've apparently been told. There's an app for everything, isn't there? Portugal and Germany are unchanged. So Patricio in goal for Portugal, Semedo, Diaz, Pepe, Guerrero, Danilo, William Carvalho, Diogo Jota, Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva and Ronaldo. And for Germany, Neuer, Ginter, Hummels, Rudiger, Klimic, Gundogan, Kroos, Gosens, Havertz, Muller and Gnabry. Anybody else who's impressed you before we kind of wrap up the Euros chat for the moment? Belgium look decent, as we would have expected at this stage of the competition.
Yeah,
they do. Go on, Shane.
They do, David. Yeah, they do. They looked very good, and the manner in which they were able to bring it around the other night. But I mean, imagine you're 1-0 down in a game, and you're trying to figure out how can you turn it around. I mean, my God, could you turn around and be looking for two better fellas? I know Hazard hasn't set the world alight this year, but to be able to bring on Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, lads. Like Kevin De Bruyne's touch for the goal was just absolutely
He's not a bad player.
There was about four fellas bought the initial shape to, as if he was going to strike it himself, and he just said good luck to them all. He was brilliant for it, and I think Lukaku, you know, you talk about, it was David there saying about Morata just not being convincing. I agree with him completely. It's a complete opposite with Morata, with Lukaku. He just like such a force. He really, really does. And the questions for me with them are I think they're excellent going forward. I don't think there's any question marks there. You would still have to have a couple of question marks over them defensively, though, that's for sure. And I think that's probably why they might go as far as, I think the quarterfinals, I think they'd find themselves up against somebody fairly decent. I think they'd be all right first round out. But yeah, going forward, a delight, but definitely still question marks there defensively, you know.
And lads, anything to add on that?
Oh, I'd agree with Shane. I think Belgium's biggest problem is probably their centre halves with Denier and Vertonghen. I think that's their big thing. But going forward, like Shane's already said, what you can say, like bringing De Bruyne on, and he just flips the whole game on his head. Special player.
I got some good text in here in 53106 on collectibles. Back before Japan Korea 02, the long lamented Observer Sports Monthly gave away printed copies of all the Panini sticker books from all previous World Cup editions. They were absolutely brilliant. East Germany, Haiti, Zaire and Peru, etc. Lovely stuff, says CJ. Back in the early 70s, Esso had a gorgeous collection of club badges from all four divisions. You got a badge for every amount of petrol, and it came in a tasteful folder. Any listeners remember this? Ask Marty and Athlone. I collected winners during the 90s, covered all sports, got a weekly supplement for many years, filled up three binders, says Enda. I also had that, Enda. Was on my bike for the last 2 hours listening to the show. Great company. Thank you. The best goal celebration I've ever seen was in the Icelandic League when the scorer pretends he's a fisherman reeling in a big fish. Who's one
I was
of the
going to mention that, JD. Yeah, that's the best in terms of ingenuity. That is the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, flipping his way to the ground, says Declan. Yeah, I do remember that one, Johnny. Yeah, as well. Anyone remember the Ireland 1990 World Cup coins? Says Colin.
I think.
We had them. They were great. All right, they made all the players look as ugly as sin, but they were great. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel Panini 89. You could actually send money away to get the last 15 or 20 stickers. So I kind of cheated, but there you go.
Oh, there you wow.
Go. There you go. Paul Gascoigne was one of the ones I didn't have. But yeah, just I remember like the glossiness of them and the smell of the packet and all that kind of thing. And it was just the magic of it. So 53106, if you want to get in touch, we're going to talk about Vinnie Perth back in Dundalk. We're going to talk about Spurs and their absolute disaster of managerial search and other things in the world of football. Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers on Monday as well. We'll look ahead to that after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. Now, as part of our story of the UEFA European Championship Series in association with Heineken, official beer partner of UEFA Euro 2020, episode 2 is out tomorrow, where Endacol will look at the story of Antonin Panenka and the 1976 Euros. As you might have guessed, it's a story about penalties.
Czechoslovakia was a communist country, so this idea of doing something so creative and spontaneous, which felt impulsive and impudent, was really counter to what the country's ethos was about. And I asked Panenka what would have happened if he'd have missed that penalty. And he said, well, I spoke to some politicians afterwards, and apparently they said I'd have spent 30 years working down the mines. So the pressure was pretty high for him. He made no mistake, and I think deservedly has this legacy of something that carries his name.
Yeah, it's great to have a penalty actually named after you, Panenka, the Panenka, that amazing penalty, which Pirlo replicated then at the Euros in 2012, I think it was. Joined by David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international, the UEFA Pro License coach Shane Keegan, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game until five. You can text us 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation, listen on News Talk, but also watch on the social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. Vinnie Perth is back at Dundalk, Shane, for a second album, and obviously he's a friend of the show like yourself. All we can do is wish him well, and hopefully it'll be a stable situation there now.
Yeah, that's it. Look, it's a crazy situation. You don't see something like that happening too often, JD, that's for sure. And it's going to be, look, it's going to be a really, really interesting one over the next while, because you know, the circumstances, I know Dan and Johnny chatted about it on their podcast during the week. The circumstances around how it's arrived at that conclusion are strange, but I suppose probably not all that strange given everything that's gone on around Dundalk over the last while. But he needs, if he's going to be successful, he needs everybody pulling in the one direction. And that's going to be the, if he can get that, if he can make that happen, then he's going to have a real, real good chance of making a success again, because he did, let's be honest, he did make a success of it the first time around, that's for sure. He had a fantastic first season. But obviously, look, and Johnny will know as well, the dynamics around the whole situation. So you've got Jim McGilton there, who, director of football, you know, the statement made it very clear that Vinnie would still be reporting to him. I don't know whether the statement was attempting to make a power play there or why they had to state that within the statement, really. But surely, you know, not that McGilton's position is weakened, but you know, as director of football, McGilton, I suppose, would have been looking to ask questions of the manager and, are you doing things right or could you be doing things better? When you've actually now been the manager for a period of time and not done very well as the manager yourself, it makes it a hell of a lot harder for you to start questioning others and how they're performing the role. So I'd like to think that that means Vinnie will be left to his own devices. The other part of it is what, and I genuinely don't know the answer to this, is what is going to be the makeup of his management team? Because, you know, it's tough enough in management with your own people around you. It's 10 times tougher if the people that you're working with and the people you have to place massive, massive trust with and have, you know, really, really close relationships aren't people that you feel are, you know, aren't the people that you wanted. So it'll be interesting to see what way that gets ironed out over the next week or two. But looking at last night, it depends, you know, glass half full take on it is it was an improved performance. It definitely was an improved performance. I thought so anyway, watching the game. And I thought certain players looked a little bit, you know, back to their old selves. Brilliant to see Patrick McIlhenny getting full 90 minutes for the first time in a long time. You know, he's been substituted so often and it almost becomes the default for players for managers to take him off. So I was delighted to see Vinnie giving him the full 90. The glass half empty, obviously, is that it's a poor result. There's no getting away from the fact that it's a poor result against a team that are bottom of the table. And it's a whirlwind start for Vinnie, because obviously three games in 7 days, and there's kind of a narrative around all of those games. They've got Drogheda now on Monday night, which is, as well as being a local derby, there was a little bit of niggle between Vinnie and Tim kind of last season when we played against them. So that'll be interesting. And then Friday night, you've got a game against Derry, where obviously the Derry manager was Vinnie's assistant manager when Vinnie was there the last time, Rory Higgins, who, you know, both myself and Johnny and most people would regard really, really highly. So, you know, they're high-stakes games, three massively high-stakes games over the course of 7 days. He would have liked a little bit more of an easy bedding-in period there.
And we have a big one on Monday, Johnny, Bows and Rovers. That's one I would love to have a full house for.
Yeah, like Rory O'Connor, who's obviously on off the ball a lot. I was actually playing Astro with him earlier, and he was on about this being at the game last night, and you know, the he was on about it on Twitter as well. Like, it's really preposterous that more people aren't allowed to go to games. I mean, there were 100 people in Galway last night, but when you see all the people mingling in bar outside bars and so forth, I mean, we've been moving really slowly and getting people back. That's my personal opinion, obviously, but I think we need more crowds back at games. You can see the difference it's made today, looking at the Hungary game, obviously, but the Vinnie Perth thing is obviously just the latest episode in how not to run a football club. That, you know, you've gone back to a manager that you let go 10 months ago. But both Shamrock Rovers, I'm really, really intrigued by this game, because I just like Shane's view on this quickly. Shane, I can't see how Rovers beat Bowes if they play the midfield that they played last night. There's far too much offence and not enough kind of conservatism and defence in that team. Bowes are the form team in the league at the moment. I think they have a real shot at making a title race out of it if they win on Monday night. But Gary O'Neill, who you know well, Shane, he doesn't seem to be in favour at the moment. And unless he plays on Monday night, I'd be amazed if Shamrock Rovers could play a team as aggressive as that with that midfield with Danny Mandrew, Graham Burke and McCann, which isn't really any proper defensive cover, and beat Bowes, who are, you know, pound for pound could be the best coach team in the league, but certainly they're the informed team in the league. I love the way they play with Devoy and Tierney. Like, absolutely love Ross Tierney. He's a player, a young kid that's come from Ballymun. He's an absolute pest if you're a defender, but I think he had 4 assists last night, scored for the under-21s that's against right, Australia yeah. recently. Just a terrific talent, Judy, and they're a really hard-working team. I had a stat during the week, I think, if games had stopped at 85 minutes, and it's obviously hypothetical, there'd be 16 points swing between Bowes and Rovers. Bowes have given away a lot of late goals. Rovers have scored a lot of late goals, but Rovers still not really convincing. And I would be interested in Shane's view on the importance of playing Gary O'Neill Monday, because I think if they don't, Rovers just can't beat Bowes.
Yeah, no, look, I would say that's exactly why he went with the team that he went with last night. I'll be honest with you, initially when the team sheet came out, I was looking and I was going, what is... Because they fielded that lineup previously this season where it has been a centre midfielder with Burke and Mandrew either side. But at the time, it seemed they were doing that because they know their options. They had a wealth of midfielders out injured at the time. And then when I saw the team sheet coming out last night, I was, what are they doing here? But I'll be honest, I hadn't copped that there was a round of games on Monday night initially, so I hadn't. Whereas that makes a hell of a lot more sense to me. I think it can be absolutely guaranteed that Gary O'Neill will come into the team. I think he got a bit of a rest last night so that he'd be ready to rock on Monday night for what they would have seen as the tougher and more important of the two games over a short period of time. Look, it's going to be a super game. Bowes are flying. Georgie Kelly absolutely banging him in. I'm delighted, really, really delighted to see it. He's absolutely one of the better fellas I've ever encountered in the League of Ireland, a cracking lad, and took a bit of grief earlier in the season when things weren't going his way. But he's, you know, that's his second hat-trick. Obviously, he went on to get 4 in the end last night, but that's his second hat-trick of the season. I'm delighted to see it working out for him. And as you say, like, the Bowes production line is just absolutely ridiculous. You have to hand it to him. Like, every time they bring in a player, JD, and that player has a sensational season and he gets snapped up by a bigger team and you're going, right, well, you know, they're in trouble now. They won't be able to replace him. And they just seem to bring in the same player again. They just bring in a prototype of that player comes in again. And they've done so well, really, really have. Like, Daniel Grant kind of came in when they lost Dan Kelly. Tierney seems to just... Tierney and Danny... And Dawson Devoy, you know, two players, incredible technical level. So they're really doing fantastic work at underage level with Bowes, to be fair to them. And yeah, again, having had a slowish start to the season, they're flying now recently. And that's going to be a top drawer game on Monday night.
Johnny was talking about directors of football there with Dundalk and David. Do they work from your experience in football? We've got this crazy situation at Spurs now. Fabio Paratici's come in from Juventus. He's trying to appoint a manager. Maybe they want to give the responsibility to him if it goes wrong. But you Pochettino, Conte, Fonseca, Gattuso now falling through. If you're a manager, would you be worried about going to a club with a structure like that? Do those structures work?
You would be wary, JD. You would be wary purely from the manager, because unless you're going in where you've already got a previously kind of built relationship with the director of football from, I don't know, you played in the same team as him coming up along or something like that. Otherwise, you probably are looking over your shoulder to a certain extent. Now, it seems to be wrote off by and large as, you know, something that's all negative and definitely is a bad thing. I can see why clubs would do it. I can see why clubs would do it. Like, if you think of the madness of it, really, JD, you give a manager at Premier League level, you know, potentially close to 100 million to spend, and 6 months later he could be gone, and the new manager has a whole new concept how he wants to play, a whole new thing. Having somebody there who's not unsackable, but having somebody there who's consistent and has a set values for the club, and means that if we change from one manager to another manager to another manager, this guy still has an overall handle on things and is able to keep things moving along and keep the principles of the club to the forefront. You know, that's the reason behind doing it. And from that point of view, it does make sense. But, you know, trying to get a good relationship between those two people is very, very hard to do.
Just on that, Shane, it's definitely true that, like, Stephen Bradley has spoken so favourably about MacPhail's role at Shamrock Rovers and, like, how important he is, and Pat Finnan at Linfield are great examples. But Vinnie Perth and Magilton is, like, Magilton is totally undermined straight away. And now Dundalk is just a ridiculously run club, full stop. And you can see this. You could write a book on it over the last 12 months, and you'd be thinking you put it in the fiction section of the bookshop, but you actually wouldn't. It's so absolutely bat crazy. But, like, it's not like they don't work, because managers have an unbelievably tough job in the League of Ireland. They've so much on, and if you have the resources, that's fine. But when you bring in somebody who's essentially at loggerheads already with the director of football, I mean, it's just crazy.
But are they loggerheads? We don't know that yet.
Well, I mean, Shane.
Shane, nothing. Look, I suppose it's just the simple fact that they're both extremely strong personalities. I hadn't even thought of Shamrock Rovers example when I was trying to say that you can see why clubs do it. The Shamrock Rovers example is a wonderful example of how it can work. And for it to work, I suppose the reason people are expecting this one to be difficult to work is that for it to work, there's got to be a lot of give and take, and there's got to be a lot of both people seeing things from the other person's point of view. And with two extremely headstrong personalities in those roles in Dundalk, it's just going to be interesting to see, you know, when it comes to having to give a yard or two, that both people are prepared to do that. That's going to be tough on them.
Like David Myler, I'm just fascinated by this. Like, at Spurs, to me, if you're like a Conte or whoever, like looking at Spurs and you're seeing directors of football, do you think the model works?
It's very difficult, JD. Obviously the lads there have spoken about the Shamrock Rovers example with Bradley and MacPhail. That seems to work, but it's very difficult if a manager comes in with his ideas. And, you know, Shane did touch on it there, when he wants to play a particular way, when he wants to go and sign 2-3 players that he feels are key. If that manager ends up getting sacked in 6 months, then, like, the prime example in my own experience, probably the best way, is I was signed by, you know, Paul Clement at Reading, and there was a director of football inevitably there. Things didn't really work out, and then Paul Clement lost his job, and then it was kind of, well, Paul Clement signed all these players, well, we don't want them, like, let's, like, how do we get rid of them? So there can be an awful kind of, like, catch-22 then, because I see both sides of it, that, like Shane said there, if you're a club, like the director of football or whoever's, you know, the chief exec, if they're looking at it, will these players be, you know, suited for the next 2, 3, 4 managers if we do end up chopping and changing, as opposed to they sign for a particular manager who plays a certain style of football? Me personally, I think it's almost like a manager, it's almost like a child and their parent asking for permission, in the sense of a manager has to, you know, obviously go to the director of football and ask him, you know, these are the players I want, and he kind of tells him yes or no, and he goes back to the, you know, the owners, the people running the club. So it can be very difficult, but there are scenarios where it does work, and when it does work, it works really well. Me personally, what is a director of football? What do you need him for? I like, bar Reading, every other football club I've been at never had a director of football, and there was no need for one.
I don't think Rafa Benitez would need a director of football, David. Would he? And it might be cooling now, this link with Liverpool, but would he be a good fit for Everton after this backlash from the Everton fans against the former Liverpool manager?
I think there should be, you know, Liverpool fans certainly, like, I think, you know, it's water on the bridge if he goes to Everton. He'll still be thought of very highly. But it's just a case, look, you look at his last jobs, he was in Newcastle, he was up in China, whatever. Does he still have the same oomph? Does he still have the same, you know, mojo that he had that, you know, at Liverpool that won the Champions League, that, you know, got him the job at Real Madrid? I don't know. You know, if I were Everton, their board, I'd be going and throwing everything I could at Antonio Conte. You can see, obviously, it probably goes back to the conversation you're having about director of football there. That was probably the breakdown in talks with Conte, because I believe at Inter Milan, he had full control of everything at the start. And then they started, you know, telling him that they needed to sell players and whatever. But Everton, I don't think Rafa's the right one for them. If I was an Everton, you know, board member,
why not, David?
I just don't know. I think the time has passed with Rafa. And I think it's a case of if what can he do at Everton? Like, they have to have success straight away, because if it was split, I don't know, Johnny, how much it is with fans of Everton, but if it was 50-50, then the 50% that are against them are never going to fully be behind them. And the ones who are there's going to be a proportion of those who are going to turn on them if results don't go their way. So I think, like, I'm looking at it, if I was Rafa, I wouldn't want the job. I believe his family still actually live in Liverpool. So that's why it probably suits him to kind of try and take that job, because he's not going to get the Liverpool job now. I just don't feel he's the right fit.
Okay. Shane, who's the right fit for Spurs? Put us out of our misery.
Oh, Lord, Johnny, or JD, my God, it's been an absolute circus, hasn't it? I have a subscription with The Athletic, and I like Jack Pitbrook in The Athletic. I think he's very, very good. And maybe it's probably only Johnny Ward that'll get this reference, but Jack Pitbrook has proclaimed the next Spurs manager as many times as Jerry Malone has proclaimed the next Dundalk manager.
I get it.
Yeah, it's madness, the amount of fellas he has said are going to get it within the next 24 hours. And at this moment,
Gattuso would have been great crack, wouldn't he?
Like Dundalk.
Strange things have happened.
Jerry Malone's the LMFM legend, isn't he? The radio legend up in
I think he might have been Dan's career guidance teacher at one stage. But in fairness, I mean, but the Spurs race, I've been speaking to lads about this, because obviously there are betting markets on this as well, and this is just like the most reckless market. There's so much happening, people coming and going. It must be great being a Spurs fan at the moment.
They're all saying that Ed Poots is going to get it, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen. We got to leave it there. I hope you enjoy the matches tonight. You're still with Italy, David. Who are you predicting, France, Shane, and Johnny? Who are you predicting to win this thing?
France for me.
Okay, thanks, lads. Speak soon.
Thanks, JD.
Cheers, guys.
This is the football show we've had on Off the Ball between the last couple of hours with David Myler, Johnny Ward and Shane Keegan. Thanks so much for their contribution. As always, don't forget, we're back tomorrow from 1 until 7. I'll be sitting in for John Molloy. We'll hear from Mark Lawrence and Philip Quinn on the Euros. Dermot Gallese will talk about the final round of the US Open. It's going to be tricky at Torrey Pines. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry got work to do to get back into contention there. Dave McIntyre and Maura Trasciani-Cali, the guests on the Sunday Paper Review, picking out the best stories of the day. I'll also be catching up with comedian and radio star and podcaster Mario Rosenstock to talk about all things sport. Be sure to tune in then from 1 o'clock for what's going to be a great show at the Euros today. It's a 1-1 draw between Hungary and France, and the unchanged teams now for the Portugal-Germany game, which kicks off in a matter of minutes now in Munich. And we also have Spain and Poland tonight in Seville. That's got an 8 o'clock start. If you missed our Saturday panel discussion on sport and medicine with the FAI medical director Alan Byrne and the Irish rugby team Dr. Kieran Cosgrave, or any of OTB Football Saturday with David Myler, Johnny Ward and Shane Keegan, you can find the podcasts of our content on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download the app for iOS and Android, or listen back wherever you get your pods. Thanks so much for listening this afternoon. We'll speak tomorrow at 1. Bye bye.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 10k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.